Church, it's been quite a week from the, I'll say silly, some of you would say regal and royal, of the royal wedding yesterday, to the incredible tragedy of Friday morning in Santa Fe, to now we get to recognize our seniors on a personal level. Some of you know that my oldest was in the hospital. We had a luxurious three-day, two-night stay in Kingwood Medical Center. But we're out now, and hello, Micah. I hope you're watching at home. But we're home, we're recuperating, we're better. It's just been a crazy week for the Wolf family in particular, but for all of us. Locally, around the world, a lot of stuff is going on. And so I was just reminded this week that through the highs and the lows, through the silly and the serious, there's no place I would rather be on Sunday morning than right here worshiping with you guys. And so I hope you feel the same way, because it's a great day to worship. Every day is a great day to worship. Today's a little extra special because we get to honor our graduates. And so first, congratulations on the job well done, or at least the job almost done. A few of you have another week to go, but you're going to make it. So congratulations on that. We're proud of you. But also, God's blessings on you in the future, because you know that you're just, you know, starting something that we are celebrating as we look back, but we look ahead and there's something in the future for you, and I hope you're excited for it. And kind of the unknown is where we get the tension and the excitement as we head off to school or join the military, start a job. Those are new things for us. And even as adults, we have those times in our lives where we move to a new city, we get married, we have kids, we start a new job. Like, those are times of anticipation, times of excitement, times when there is a battle in front of us. A battle not necessarily in a negative way, but something is in front of us. And I hope those times aren't just restricted to when something big is going on in your life. I hope there are times that you can always see that God has something to do. God has something planned. God has something in store for you. Because if he was done with you, you wouldn't be here, right? Like, you're still here, so God still has plans for you. And so as you look ahead, we can let God fight our battles, whether it's college or job or military or whether it's whatever is in front of us. And so the challenge to all of us is to embrace what God has for us and to let him fight our battles for us. Now, we're going to look at a kind of a crazy story today from the Old Testament. It's the story of Elisha, and we'll make a couple references to other Old Testament stories. But the main point of the story, the main point of the song, is that it's God who fights our battles. And so whatever battle you may be facing, I hope that you can surrender and let God fight that battle for you. Several times in the Old Testament, it says the battle belongs to the Lord, or this battle is the Lord's. And so the Old Testament heroes reference that. They know that God is in control and that God is going to fight the battle for them. We do need to knock out one misconception before we go any further. And that misconception is, well, if God's going to fight my battles, then I'm just going to like sit back and relax on the couch and watch a Netflix series or something. That's not what we mean when we say let God fight our battles. I think you know that, but I want to give you an example from David, as in David and Goliath. So this story you know well, but I want to read you the speech he gives to Goliath right before he twirls the rock and puts it in Goliath's forehead. He gives this speech, and this is awesome. This is epic. I don't know why it's not in a movie. Maybe it already is. It should be if it's not. This is just powerful stuff from David. So this is from 1 Samuel 17, verse 45. David said to the Philistine, "You come against me with a dagger, spear, and sword, but I come against you in the name of Yahweh of hosts, the God of Israel's armies. You have defied him. Today the Lord will hand you over to me. Today I'll strike you down, cut your head off, and give the corpses of the Philistine camp to the birds of the sky and the creatures of the earth. Then all the world will know that Israel has a God, and this whole assembly will know that it is not by sword or by spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's. He will hand you over to us." So David makes this grand speech about God is in control, God's going to take care of this, but he doesn't just retire and go back and sit and watch what happens. That's right before he twirls the rock around and kills Goliath. And so as he's preaching this to Goliath, this idea that God's going to fight his battles, this doesn't lead to inaction on his part. It leads to action, right? When we get a glimpse of what God is doing around us, it shouldn't cause us to withdraw and say, okay, let's see how God works this out. It should invite us to engage and join and see what God is doing and join him in that. You know, God is at work. He's doing great things. The battle belongs to him. Are you going to join him? Now, our main story comes from 2 Kings. Again, this is kind of a crazy story. The details are miraculous and strange and weird, but the principles we can learn from it still apply to us today, even though the story seems a little bit out there. So from chapter 6 of 2 Kings, I'll start in verse 8. Once when the king of Syria was warring against Israel, he took counsel with his servants, saying, "At such and such a place shall be my camp." But the man of God, that's referring to Elisha, the man of God sent word to the king of Israel, "Beware that you do not pass this place, for the Syrians are going down there." And the king of Israel sent to the place about which the man of God told him. Thus he used to warn him, so that he saved himself there more than once or twice. Okay, so you get the picture. The king of Syria is planning these sneak attacks, kind of a guerrilla warfare. I'm going to sneak up on the Israelite army this way. But it never works because God tells Elisha what's going to happen. And Elisha goes and tells the king of Israel what's going to happen. And so they're prepared for it. And so you can imagine the frustration of being the king of Syria when your plan is a surprise attack and the element of surprise is gone because the other side knows what's going to happen. Pick it up in verse 11. The mind of the king of Syria was greatly troubled because of this thing, and he called his servants and said to them, "Will you not show me who of us is for the king of Israel?" This has to be a tense meeting, right? He calls in all the upper guys and basically says, "Somebody's a traitor. Who is it?" And one of his servants said, "None, my lord, O king, but Elisha, the prophet who is in Israel, tells the king of Israel the words that you speak in your bedroom." Like he ramps it up a notch. It's not just military stuff. Like, Elisha knows everything about you. And the king said, "Go and see where he is, that I may send and seize him." It was told him, "Behold, he is in Dothan." Talk more about Dothan in a minute. So he sent there horses and chariots and a great army, and they came by night and surrounded the city. So the king of Syria is ticked, and rightly so, because his plans are being thwarted, and he can't figure out why. So his natural conclusion is that there's a traitor in the midst. So he calls them together, says, "What's going on?" They say, no, it's not us, it's Elisha. And I guess because he's been burned before with the surprise technique with a smaller band, he just says, "We're going to send everybody. We're going to send a great army. And if Elisha knows we're coming, too bad, because we're just going to overpower him and we're going to take him." That's the plan that the king lays out. Verse 15. When the servant of the man of God, so this means the man of God is Elijah, so when Elisha's servant rose early in the morning and went out, behold, an army with horses and chariots was all around the city. And the servant said, "Alas, my master, what shall we do?" Well, that's a fair question. If you wake up some morning and you are literally surrounded by horses and chariots, you're probably going to go to the person in charge and say, what's the story? What's the plan? How are we going to do this? Now, to give you maybe a better picture of what's going on, I have a picture of Dothan. In the valley down there is Dothan, and it's surrounded by hills and mountains. And so you can kind of see hills on the far side of the picture. You can tell that the picture is taken from on a hill on this side of the picture. And so put yourself in the servant's position. You wake up in the morning to go get the paper and make coffee for Elijah, and you look out, and everywhere around you is surrounded by horses and chariots. It's going to feel overwhelming, and he's overwhelmed. And so he goes to Elisha and says, what's the plan here? Verse 16, Elisha answers him, "Do not be afraid, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them." Now, put yourself, if you know the story, you know what Elisha's talking about. But chances are not everybody knows the story, and certainly the servant doesn't know how the story is going to end. And so you put yourself in the servant's shoes, and Elisha says, hey, there's more of us than there are of them. The servant has to be thinking, no, there's not. Like, there's two of us. And it's true that prophets in the Old Testament would sometimes travel together, study together, work together. But even if it was 20 or 30 of them, it would be no match for hills surrounding them with horses and chariots. And so when Elisha says, there's more of us than there are of them, the servant's got to be thinking, what is he talking about? In verse 17, Elisha prays. He doesn't explain, he just prays. Elisha prayed and said, "O Lord,
please open his eyes that he may see. So the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw. And behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. So his eyes are opened. And this is part of the verse to that song, that when I think that I'm surrounded, maybe when I really am surrounded, I'm also surrounded by God. His eyes were open to see not just a hillside full of the enemy, right? This doesn't minimize the enemy. It doesn't minimize the danger. But he gets a glimpse of what God is up to. When he thinks he's surrounded, he's also surrounded by God and by God's angels and God's army. Now we're going to look through three of the people in the story, kind of the three key characters in the story, and see what we can learn from Elisha, from God, and from the servant. So first, what does Elisha do? Well, he does something that's fairly simple. He speaks a simple truth, and he says a simple prayer. The simple truth is, there's more of us than there are of them. Now, that doesn't look like a truth to the servant, but Elisha knows it's true. There's more of us than there are of them. And then he says a simple prayer. God, open my servant's eyes so that he could see. So first, the simple truth. There's more of us. One of my former pastors is fond of frequently saying that God plus one is always a majority. And so you can take that with you, that if you're in a battle, even if you're the only one at work, at school, at college, you guys will probably be challenged on what you believe. Even if you are the only one, you're not a minority, because if God is with you, you're a majority. And that's a truth that Elisha reminded us of. The second thing he does was a simple prayer, just that God would open his servant's eyes. I think there's a lot of depth in what Elisha's doing here. He understands that he's not going to give a big treatise or paper on how God works or on spiritual warfare or on angels. He certainly could have gone into all of that, but he just said, look, there's more of us than there are of them. God, open my servant's eyes. I think what Elisha realized in that moment is that more important than knowledge about God is faith in God. And so he could have increased the knowledge of his servant and done so pretty easily, because he's Elisha and he knows everything, knows what's going on. But instead, he prays that God would open his eyes. And so he wants his servant to move from just knowledge about God to faith in God. And I also think that sometimes God might put us in a battle to increase our faith. Right? You may know all there is to know about God, and there's a time and a place to study God's word, to know more, to learn more. I like doing that. I think it strengthens my faith. But maybe it's only in the course of a battle where we really learn if I'm going to be faithful or not, if we're really going to test my faith. And so that's what Elisha prays. He doesn't go into the knowledge. He instead focuses on the faith. Well, God's part is simple on the surface, right? He opens the servant's eyes. That's pretty simple, pretty straightforward. But I think there's some deep theology going on underneath that. And the idea is you can't really argue someone into your position when it comes to God-sized things. It has to be God that opens their eyes. And so even if Elijah had tried to explain what was going on, that probably wasn't going to do it. He needed God to open the person's eyes. And this is a great perspective if you're trying to witness to your friends, if you're trying to explain a spiritual truth to somebody and you feel like it's not getting anywhere. That's because their eyes aren't open. And so it is upon you to always be prepared to give a reason for the hope that you have, to know the answers, to study your apologetics so you can answer, you know, creation and dinosaurs and evil. And you need to know that stuff. But it's God that opens people's eyes. And so in some ways that's frustrating, because sometimes you're beating your head against the wall if you're trying to convince somebody of something. On the other way, it's liberating, though, because it's not your job. Your job is to be a faithful representative of what God says, of what his word says. Share that with them with gentleness, with kindness, with respect, with truth. But it's God that opens their eyes. And so you need to be praying along with sharing that God would do just that. Well, the servant had his eyes open and gets a new perspective on things. I think all of us, well, I think it's easy to look at the people in the Bible who make mistakes and say, oh, I wouldn't have done that. I'd have been better than that. And I don't, for most of the time, that's not true, and it's definitely not true here. If I woke up and saw surrounding me horses and chariots, I'm going to be worried, because I think all of us base our confidence on what we can see. It's just natural. If I can see the enemy, then I'm going to be scared. Probably all of you have been on one end or the other of this extreme. If you've been on a really good athletic team, you know, baseball or soccer, basketball, whatever, and you roll up and you see the team that you're going to face, you've probably had the experience of looking up at the other guys thinking, oh man, this is not going to go well. Your confidence is based on what you see. On the other side, you've probably rolled into the gym someday and looked down on the other guys and watched them warm up and think, we got this. We're gonna do fine today. Because your confidence is based on what you see. And the servant did the same thing. He looked out, and what did he see? Was the enemy vastly outnumbered him with weapons and experience. And he's thinking, we're done for. He's basing his confidence on what he sees. I think the other error, though, sort of the opposite problem, still basing your confidence on what you see, is the problem of the rich young ruler, right? He's the one that goes to God, and God says, now you need to sell everything. And he walks away and says, no thanks. Because I think his confidence is based on what he sees. And the rich young ruler sees wealth, he sees health, he sees everything put together. So I'm going to put my confidence in that. Things are going well. What else do I need to be worried about? It's probably why God says, or Jesus says, it's harder for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. Because the rich man is surrounded by stuff he can see, and instead is going to place his confidence in that rather than his confidence in God. And it's a confidence built on sand, and it's not going to work, and it's not going to last. But we're all prone to base our confidence on what we can see. And that's what the servant was doing. That's what we may be tempted to do. Either problem is a sight problem, right? We're looking at what we can see rather than what we can't see. There's something more going on that we need God to open our eyes to. And it's not a matter of not seeing the enemy, right? This isn't minimizing the battle you're in. It's not minimizing the army that was surrounding Elisha and his servant. This is a case of maximizing who God is and seeing the potential of God at work in your struggles, in your battles. When I think that I'm surrounded, you may literally be surrounded. I'm also surrounded by God. By the way, if you've never had your eyes opened to the things of God, by God, to see what's going on, then you're fighting your own battles and you're placing your confidence in what you can see, and that's a struggle. And I would invite you today, if you haven't done that, to take your eyes off your struggle and place your eyes on Christ and put your confidence there, because then you can be surrounded by him. A little sidebar here, we're going to skip to Moses, another example of somebody who sees something that isn't there. This is from Exodus. Moses said to the people, don't be afraid. Stand firm and see the Lord's salvation. You can't physically see the Lord's salvation with your eyes, but Moses tells them, stand firm, see the Lord's salvation that he will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. This is a confident Moses. He sees the enemy. The enemy's real. The enemy's powerful. The enemy's strong. The enemy's terrible. And he sees it and he acknowledges that. But he knows that there's more. There's more than the eye can see. And he's challenging the Israelites to open your eyes to what God can do. Because God can fight your battles. Well, jump back to 2 Kings. The rest of the story just keeps getting crazier and crazier and crazier. I strongly recommend you read it. What happens next is Elisha prays, continuing with this sight motif, he prays that the enemy's eyes would be blinded. And so, sure enough, God blinds the enemy. And if you're just reading along, you think, oh, man, Elisha and the servant are about to whoop up on these guys because they can't see. But that's not what happens. That would have been kind of an Old Testament thing to do, but that's not what happens. Elisha invites them in and serves them a banquet with the king. And the story just gets weirder and weirder. I challenge you to go read it. The main point for today is, when you think you're surrounded, there's more there. If it doesn't look good, God's still working. When you think that you're surrounded, you might be, but you're also surrounded by God. And that knowing, that being absolutely confident that there's more there, of being sure of what you can't see, of being certain of what's out there in the future, I hope those words and that theme sounds familiar, because that's the definition of faith in Hebrews chapter 11. Faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. And so yet again, the Old Testament provides us a picture and a pathway into the New Testament of, even when you can't see what's going on, God's at work. And if you can have faith, then you can walk in confidence that God will fight your battles for you. You may be familiar with the rest of Hebrews 11. It's the Old Testament Hall of Fame, we call it, where we list a bunch of Old Testament heroes and what they did. But it follows a pattern. Each one says, by faith, insert name here, and then what they did. By faith, some person, action. And so again, when God fights your battles, you don't step back and say, okay, God's got this. No, you engage the fight with him and you trust that God's going to work. By faith, Noah built an ark. By faith, Abraham obeyed and went. By faith, Moses chose, and on and on and on. By faith, insert your name. Are you going to act on that faith? Because that's what we're called to. And when you have real faith, when you can see the unseeable, when you have confidence that God is going to work, then you can take action. You can step forth in action like David did, like the Israelites did with Moses against the Egyptians, like Elisha and his servant did with the Syrians. Or are you focused on what you can see? The error of the initial error, anyway, of the servant, the error of the rich young ruler. If you focus on what you can see, your confidence is based on what you see. And maybe that leads you to shirk back and think nothing's going to good ever happen for me. Or the other extreme is, well, I got things put together, so I'm good. I don't need God. Either way is a problem with your sight. You're focused on what you can see. A lot of times we think, and in fact, it's easy to think that we need to be the biggest, the fastest, the strongest, the best, the smartest. Meanwhile, God is saying, this battle belongs to me. Get your eyes off your stuff, get your eyes on me, and let me take care of things. Again, Elijah and his servant, the battle belongs to God. David and Goliath, the battle belongs to God. Moses and the Israelites versus the Egyptians, the battle belongs to the Lord. Whatever the circumstance, whatever the situation, the battle belongs to him. And I hope you'll have faith to let him do that. As the band makes their way up, we'll sing in a moment. I'm going to ask a couple questions for you to consider. The first one is, what battles are you facing? Now, I don't know that answer for you, but you probably have a pretty good answer in your head as to what's going on. Maybe it's a battle with people, with others around you. Maybe it's parents. Maybe it's friends, siblings. Maybe there's some conflict going on that's a real battle for you right now. Maybe your battle is with the battle with self. Doubt, loneliness, guilt, fear. Those are real battles that we face. Maybe your battle is just straight up with God. You don't know what's going on. You look around and you think you're surrounded. Maybe you are surrounded. Circumstances aren't going well and you're mad. You're wondering where he is. That's your battle. But the far more important question is, how is your faith? Because even asking the question, how is your faith, gets our eyes off of what we can see and puts our eyes on the stuff that we can't see. And so my challenge to you is, how can you grow your faith? How can your faith help you? I'm going to give you two quick answers that I think might help you grow your faith, or at least put you in a position so that God could grow your faith. And the first is easy. Ask God for help. That's what Elisha did. He didn't try to argue his servant into, explaining what was going on. He just said, God, open his eyes. Maybe that needs to be your prayer today. God, open my eyes. What I see isn't good, but God, open my eyes to see something more. In the New Testament, a guy prays. He says, Lord, I believe. Help my unbelief. That prayer resonates with me. I feel like I've got some level of faith, but God, help me believe more. And so maybe that needs to be your prayer today. God, open my eyes. Help me see. Help me believe. Second thing I would challenge you to do is preach the gospel to yourself. Seems kind of weird. We're always about, tell other people about Jesus. Sometimes you need to tell yourself about Jesus. I ran across this quote this week. No one is more influential in your life. So this is going to be good. What's coming? No one is more influential in your life than you are, because no one talks to you more than you do. I never thought about it like that, right? We warn our teenagers, and you probably warn your kids, be careful who you're around because they're going to be an influence on you. But nobody's around you more often than you are. So what are you telling yourself? What are you preaching to yourself? Because you're preaching something. Is it negative? Is it I can't make it? Is it God's not real? Is it I'm not going to get through this? Or are you? Can you be like David and preach to yourself? He was preaching to Goliath, but I can't help that his faith was probably increased as he was preaching at Goliath. He's reminding himself that God's going to get us through this. We're going to make it because God's on our side. And so I hope you take a moment to listen to yourself when you're talking to yourself, going through things. Preach the gospel to yourself. In a moment, we're going to sing. We're going to kind of reprise the This Is How I Fight My Battles song. Some of you will probably stand up and sing it with gusto because you've seen God fight your battles. You know he's there. You know he's done it before. You trust him. You've got faith. Man, if that's you, stand up, arms raised, and get after it. Sing it out. Some of you, though, are probably in the middle where you maybe need to convince yourself it's true. Maybe you need to preach to yourself during the song. Maybe you need to sing and listen to the words and let the truth of it sink in so that you can have more faith in God. There's probably some of you, though, who feel like you can't sing it at all. It's just too much, it's overwhelming. The events of the week, your circumstances, it's like, I can't sing it. That's okay. Let other people sing it over you. Listen to the words. Let God's truth sink in that he can fight your battles. Maybe you can get your eyes off what's going on. Put your eyes on Jesus. Let him fight the battles for you. In a moment, we'll stand and sing. I'll be here. Pastor Jeremy will be here. Other staff will be here. We'd love to talk with you, pray with you. Prayer rails are open. You deal with God how and where you need to deal with him. I'll close with another passage from the Old Testament. This was yet another story that we could have looked at, that the details were different, but the message was the same. From 2 Chronicles, don't be afraid and don't panic because of this huge army, for the battle is not yours, but God's. You do not have to fight this battle. Position yourselves, stand still, and see the salvation of the Lord. He is with you. Do not be afraid or discouraged. Tomorrow, I thought that's interesting because I bet a bunch of you have battles tomorrow. Tomorrow, go out and face them, for Yahweh is with you. Pray with me if you would. God, forgive us when we base our confidence on the things we can see, and whether that leads to a lack of confidence or an overconfidence. Either way, we have our eyes off of you, God. So open our eyes to the things of you this morning. And so whether what's in front of us is a college or a new job, whatever circumstances surround us, God, that we could stand and sing that you're going to fight our battles. We'll join you, we'll participate, but we'll watch you do the work, God. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Stand with us as we sing.